We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Debate over raising the minimum wage continues in Congress.
These wage issues are very divisive, and you know, it really comes down to the arguments made, especially on the opponents, is about cost of living. So you talk about it in the South, and a dollar goes much further there than it goes into the Northeast or the coast, the West Coast.
We'll talk about how it's playing out in the restaurant industry, one of the biggest minimum wage sectors. And from a record high to a deep dive, we'll explain today's turbulence on Wall Street. Plus, why cod and calamari are getting costlier. It's Thursday, February 25th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. U.S. stocks slid today. The Dow dropped around 600 points, or 1.9%. The S&P 500 shed 2.6%, and the Nasdaq lost 3.6%. Our markets reporter, Akani Otani, says it's a dramatic reversal from Wednesday, when the Dow closed at a new record.
This is sort of a continuation of something we've been seeing for the past couple of weeks, where bond yields have been rising, inflation expectations have been rising, and those two things have generally been putting pressure on the more expensive, sort of riskier parts of the stock market that have been doing really, really well until now. So tech stocks are a big part of that. And that's why we were seeing names like Facebook, Amazon, Alphabet among the biggest decliners in the market Thursday.
Twitter was a bright spot in the world of tech. Shares were up 3.7% after the social media giant announced plans to launch a subscription service for content creators and double its revenue by 2023. Akani says there's another strange trend to keep an eye on.
You could argue maybe some of the riskiest parts of the market were doing really well Thursday. Some of the meme stocks, which people have been nicknaming them, things like GameStop, AMC, were actually doing really, really well and rallying Thursday in a continuation of this overnight rally we saw. And that is just sort of another remarkable wrinkle to what's been going on in markets lately. I mean, we've been seeing broadly investors pulling back from riskier sectors, but also this surge in retail trading activity and individuals in particular flocking to names that have been really talked up on Reddit and social media. So two sort of contradictory seeming things going on in the markets, and it'll be interesting to see how we end up finishing the week.
Airbnb posted a steep fourth quarter loss in its first results as a public company, as costs related to its market debut capped a year in which the pandemic ravaged the travel industry. The home sharing company reported a $3.9 billion loss in the 3 months through December, but that included a $2.8 billion charge for stock compensation related to its IPO. Airbnb bookings dried up in the early months of the pandemic, but that started to change in the summer. The company's fourth quarter revenue was down 22%, its full year revenue down 30% year over year. New weekly unemployment claims fell sharply last week. The Labor Department says they were down to a seasonally adjusted 730,000, the lowest weekly level since late November. Our labor, economics, and policy reporter Eric Morath says it's a positive sign that hiring is starting to pick up after a winter slowdown.
The data does come with some important caveats. Some states, particularly Ohio, have reported they're seeing increased levels of fraudulent activity. So it's possible that the data, which already is volatile, is not sending a clear signal on the health of the labor market. And what's more, we had large storms in Texas and other parts of the country that caused disruptions and power outages. The report last week didn't show a significant increase in claims in that area of the country. And some economists are curious about that. They had anticipated there were business closures. They wonder if, in fact, people maybe weren't able to file for claims because they didn't have power or internet access. And therefore, we could see a pickup in claims in the coming weeks.
Three House Republicans joined Democrats to pass a bill extending civil rights protections to gay and transgender people today. The legislation, known as the Equality Act, would ban discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. The expansive effort marks a major plank in what Democrats are terming their equality agenda, but it has spurred fierce opposition from conservatives over religious freedom and set off a new round of partisan fighting in Congress. The White House supports the bill, but its fate in the Senate is uncertain. And a former U.S. Olympic gymnastics coach, John Gettert, has died by suicide hours after he was charged with 20 counts of human trafficking, stemming from allegations that he profited from the forced labor of young gymnasts. He was also facing two sexual assault charges. Michigan officials say Gettert led a criminal enterprise and lied to police during the investigation of disgraced team doctor Larry Nassar, one of his closest allies. Nassar is serving a life sentence in federal prison after pleading guilty to sexual abuse charges. Gettert's death was confirmed by a representative of his attorney and the Michigan Attorney General. Coming up after the break, the battle over raising the minimum wage and how it's playing out in the restaurant industry.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Low-wage workers have really suffered during the pandemic. This morning, we talked about how frontline grocery employees are pushing for more hazard pay on the state and local levels. But there's been a larger federal battle brewing over raising the minimum wage overall. President Biden's current proposal calls for gradually increasing it to $15 an hour over the course of 4 years. Congress is divided over the issue, as are the industries that pay minimum wage workers. One of the largest groups affected would be the restaurant industry, which, according to the National Restaurant Association, employs more than 15.6 million people. Heather Haddon covers the industry for The Wall Street Journal. She joins me now from Chicago. Hi, Heather. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.
So, Heather, the president's current plan would gradually increase the federal minimum wage, which has been at $7.25 an hour since 2009, but it would also eliminate a sub-minimum wage for workers who depend on tips. Can you explain how that currently works and what the pros and cons are for restaurant workers and their employers?
Yeah, so it works different in every state, and it is kind of complicated. So currently, in a number of states, the minimum wage is lower for those tipped workers. We're talking about bartenders, servers, people in cafes, people who receive tips to supplement their income. So a restaurant can keep wages for those workers lower than the minimum wage and then make up the difference between the minimum wage and that lower rate with tips. So as long as they are getting enough to get to the minimum wage with tips, then they can pay them a lower wage. So the arguments by the restaurant companies is that, you know, for a big restaurant chain like an Olive Garden, they say their average tip workers make, you know, $20 on average, which is much higher than the minimum wage because of those tips, and therefore they benefit from the system. You know, it does divide the industry. I think it's important to note that this is not something where there's universal agreement. But for some of those tip workers, they say, you know, again, that's not fair. We should have a minimum wage that is a living wage, and that should be more equal for everyone.
Lawmakers have also been pretty split on this issue. Why has it been such a battle in Congress?
These wage issues are very divisive. And, you know, it really comes down to the arguments made, especially on the opponents, is about cost of living. So you talk about it in the South, and a dollar goes much further there than it goes into the Northeast or the coast, the West Coast. And so some of these lawmakers for lower cost states say it's just not fair to increase the wages across the board. There should be cost of living adjustments for this. They also make the argument, and some of these restaurant companies as well, that, you know, a starting job in a restaurant is not meant to be a living wage, it's a starting wage. On the flip side, proponents say that's just not fair, that, you know, there should be more equity in these kind of jobs, that these jobs should be able to support someone who has a family, and that many of these workers are not just teenagers. They're professionals with kids at home, or they're moms and dads, and they need to make more money.
Right. And what else have you been hearing from restaurant workers themselves? We know the industry was very hard hit during this pandemic. I want to ask you about a recent study from the Congressional Budget Office, which found that raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2025 could mean an increase in pay for up to 27 million workers and lift hundreds of thousands of Americans out of poverty. But it also found that it would mean 1.4 million jobs would be cut.
Well, a lot of restaurant workers have left. There's millions of jobs that have not returned to the industry. It's over 2 million jobs still that have not returned since the pandemic. So a lot of these workers have left, and wage is becoming much more of an issue for these restaurant companies. And on the flip side, some restaurant companies say they have boosted their wages far higher than minimum wage because it's so hard for them to keep and retain workers because they have to compete with Amazon, who's paying $15 an hour. Costco just announced that they're paying $16 an hour. I mean, a lot of these big box stores have raised their wages, and restaurants tend to be lower still. So, you know, some of them do need to say they are raising their wages. I think their argument is they don't want to be forced to do it. They want to phase it in on their timeline.
And what about for restaurant patrons? Is there concern about passing along cost to consumers and whether they'll be willing to pay higher costs to give more workers a higher wage?
I think, you know, the public's generally supportive of minimum wage increases. I mean, I think there's a lot of divisions on all the kind of dividing lines you tend to see. And in talking to some restaurant owners, they said when the minimum wage did go up, they did not find that tips went down. So it does seem like patrons are willing to be generous when they can. But, you know, no one likes menu price increases. I mean, people don't like to have to pay more for what they expected to pay less for a couple months ago. So there could be, you know, some sticker shock when these roll in, and depending on how high these menu prices are, we'll have to see.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Haddon. Heather, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much.
And finally, Americans usually eat fish in restaurants, but during the pandemic, they've been buying and cooking more seafood at home. Right now, many Christians are doubling down on the fish to replace meat during Lent. But all that tilapia and tuna could start stretching their wallets. Here's why. A flood of imports and a workforce hit by COVID-19 has created a backlog of fish at major U.S. ports. Shipping containers full of salmon, calamari, and cod are just sitting there, and the freezers are filling up. Our food industry reporter Jesse Newman says importers are having to shuffle fish from one cold storage warehouse to another, and the bottlenecks are the cause of the price hikes.
This is, you know, going to cost millions and millions of dollars for the companies. And so in some cases, it's pushing up wholesale costs for seafood. And that is translating into higher costs for consumers, both at restaurants and at retail. These transportation and logistics costs are ultimately trickling down to the consumer that's going to wind up paying more for fish.
One distributor said the delays have left him with 9 tons of shrimp rings. They were supposed to be sold ahead of the Super Bowl, but they arrived late. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.